It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Welcome back, everyone. 32 after the hour, time for our cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. We've got Dr. Mitch on the line. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Oh, having a good day despite the snow.
Oh, no. Snow all over the Northeast again. And I'm back in Portland where we got some clouds and rain. So we got a little bit of precipitation here as well.
This is life.
This is life. All right. Having quite a day today, too, Dr. Mitch. New laptop, new system. Things aren't working quite the way like I expect them to. So if I'm a little off kilter today, that's why.
Oh, hey, Skype was kind of crazy, too, so we'll make the best of it.
Okay, let's get to it. Folks, get your questions in to our chat room if you have any questions for Dr. Mitch, and we'll get them asked during this session. In the meantime, we've got some stories to talk about here, and okay, folks are saying no audio for Dr. Mitch. Yeah, that would figure. Let me see if I can figure out what's going on the audio side of things, because I'm hearing Dr. Mitch just fine, so I know he's there. But anyway, let's get to this first topic in our cannabis Q&A today, and that has to do with the most recent study on Epidiolex. The University of Chicago's Lurie Hospital has pointed out that they've gotten some good results on Dravet syndrome. And I was wondering if you could fill us in a little bit on these trials and how much farther does GW have to go before this becomes a prescription medication?
So, I mean, it's sad because basically they've gone through the first step of just showing that it's fine with healthy people. Now they've got a large sample showing efficacy with kids with epilepsy. I'm hoping the FDA will cut them a little slack. Usually you have to have a larger sample than this in order to get to the sort of stage four where doctors can actually prescribe. It's complicated because there's some states where they can and some states where they can't. And so I'm afraid it's going to take markedly longer than it should. And it's unfortunate because anytime you see one of these kids have a seizure, it tears your heart out. So I'm actually hoping I'll get a little extra mercy, if you will, from the FDA to make this happen a little sooner. But otherwise, it could still be another year. I noticed the stock is kind of going crazy, so we'll see what happens.
What is the difference between the product that they're putting together, this Epidiolex, and what we know as Phoenix Tears or cannabis oil that people are getting results with so far in some of these medical states?
Well, in part, we're not exactly sure if the cannabis tears are made the same way from each of the people who've been sort of emailing around talking about the story. And the deal with this is a specific strain and extract made of that strain, much to the same specifications as you often see on these YouTube-type videos about how to make the oil. But theirs has a better control and a better standardization process, so we have a relatively good feel for THC and cannabidiol because all the plants are the same. We can't necessarily say the same thing for what's been going on in people's backyards. Hmm.
All right. Well, we'll keep our eye on this, and it's an interesting development to me because I've always predicted how medical marijuana is going to eventually lead to these prepared, standardized dosages and pharmaceuticals. And it seems to be, at least from my perspective, that it's kind of unfolding that way, don't you think?
Very much so. And what's curious is the initial fears were always that we didn't have a standardized dosage procedure, and so that was going to be a big issue. And now, I mean, the edibles all over states where they're available are being pretty clear about, this is a 5-milligram thing, this is a 10-milligram thing, and I think we're stepping in the right direction.
All right, let's take a look at this other study that I thought was really interesting, pointing out a similarity or in the genes, that is, the genetic predisposition for marijuana use may also be tied to the genetic predisposition for schizophrenia or depression. Again, it sounds like one of these correlative things, but what can you tell us about it?
I'm afraid the coverage of this actually kind of misrepresented it. So there definitely seems to be a heritable component to cannabis use disorders. And then they kind of took this leap to, oh, and it's kind of like the ones that we saw with schizophrenia. In fact, the ones with schizophrenia have not replicated well, so it might be one of two different genes that put folks at risk for schizophrenia. And then in combination with heavy use early in life might predict some kind of psychotic disorder more generally. I think actually what's inherited is your response to cannabis. So some of us know those folks who, you know, get high one time and have a total panic attack and can't stand ever doing it again, as opposed to those who use it and find it incredibly euphoria producing and wonderful. And I think that's actually what's getting inherited. And that second group may be the folks who are at more risk for cannabis use disorder.
That's interesting. And cannabis use disorder, we have to remind people a little bit about that. It's a DSM-5 thing with substance use disorders. Can you give people some ideas of how they would know that they've got a disorder versus just liking to smoke pot?
I mean, what's funny is the hallmarks have always been tolerance and withdrawal, and I really feel like those just aren't the same issue for cannabis as they are with heroin and some of the other substance use disorders. And I think the thing to look for is, are you screwing up at work, and are your loved ones grousing at you about being stoned all the time? And those are much better indicators of problems and, you know, potential need for monitoring or modifying your use. Whereas, you know, tolerance to cannabis, who knows what strain you're getting and how many times and things like that. And marijuana withdrawal, despite the work from Budney's lab, I just don't really believe in that.
All right, let's take a look at another study. This one coming from University of North Carolina on, the headline is that marijuana study to utilize text messaging, but I think this study has something to do with cravings that marijuana users might have. Can you fill us in?
Well, so it's not an outrageous hypothesis that folks who crave cannabis end up using it more often. And in truth, the replication of these craving paradigms, we've had a hard time with it in my lab, and I know some other researchers who, you know, bring people in and have them smell certain things to try to get the craving to go. I think it's really dependent upon time of day and history of use and all these other things. But the hope is that they could have folks text message them when they're craving and when they're using in order to sort of take advantage of, you know, modern electronic gizmos to make the research a little more in the moment and actually have a better prediction and a better link between craving and actual use, rather than trying to bring folks into the lab and trying to make them crave and trying to generalize from that. So it'll have a little more external validity and has the chance to generalize to more people.
All right. Let's go to another study or another survey this time. And we reported on this last week, an Associated Press poll showing an all-time high, shall we say, for marijuana legalization support, peaking out at 61%. This isn't Gallup, but AP sounds like a pretty reliable poll, don't you think?
Well, and in fact, what I'm, you know, of course I'm delighted, and I'm sure you are too, and, you know, all the years of work we put in for us to make this happen. And what I'm eager to see is basically that not only are folks saying they support, well, not only are they supportive of marijuana legalization, they're actually willing to say so on the phone. And I feel like that suggests that this may be kind of an underestimate, because there might be a subset of folks who think, oh, man, I'm not going to tell this guy, but if I were actually in the voting booth by myself, I'd gladly hit the thumbs up button.
And as usual, the support greater among those with more liberal politics, those people who are younger. So it seemed to me that as time goes on, you know, more of our opponents are over the age of 65 and they're not going to be around much longer. This support can only continue to grow. Folks, we want to remind you, too. Go ahead. Sorry.
It does underline our need to make sure those 18 to 24-year-olds make it to the voting booth. And I want to just, you know, definitely make sure everybody's registered and ready to go out there and do it.
That's right. You're in New York State. They've got a big primary coming up there, April 19th. It could be huge for the Democratic Party for sure. Are you guys closed primaries up there in New York?
It's interesting. My wife and I are having a little battle about this, but yeah, we're going to definitely do it. I know that Hillary's pulling a little bit ahead, but a lot of folks here are feeling the burn.
Oh, good to hear it. One final story here for our cannabis Q&A, but before we get to it, I want to remind folks, if you're a little shy and don't want to talk about this on the air, you can always send an email to Dr. Mitch directly at 420research@gmail.com. We've also got our line open 24 hours a day at 971-533-7111. You can call anytime, leave a voicemail, and if it's for Dr. Mitch, we'll make sure to use it on the show on another Monday episode. All right, this last story, interesting one coming from Fusion, explaining how people are finally figuring out that weed is a fantastic aphrodisiac. Is there any truth to the rumor that marijuana itself, THC or any of its components, are actually an aphrodisiac?
Well, what's funny is Halicus had some data on this just from a survey in 86. Charlie Tart had done it in 71. But if you look back in the old Arabian Nights tales, there's actually a story about a guy at a public bath getting really stoned, closing his eyes, and just showing a sign of arousal, shall we say? So this isn't necessarily news. I would say the legend has been out there. I do emphasize that although it is an aphrodisiac, it is not a lubricant.
Yeah, be very careful that way. Now, with respect to that, though, is it due to, I mean, I always thought that perhaps it's just the fact that Keith Stropp always has his speech about it makes food better, it makes music better, it makes sex better, and so that it's not like it's an aphrodisiac specifically, but it just makes all sensual pleasures that much more enjoyable. Is that a reasonable hypothesis?
I think it is, and when you think about just sort of a general increased sensitivity to positive reinforcers, that really does kind of account for all those different effects.
All right. Well, Dr. Mitch, we've got plenty of marijuana. I don't know what else I can do to fulfill the testing, though. We'll see what we can do. Also, let's not forget the normal legislative fly-in day, the lobby day, is coming up May 23rd and 24th. You can register for that and come into Washington, D.C., meet Dr. Mitch, meet Keith Stropp, meet Alan St. Pierre, and lobby your legislators at the federal level for an end to this prohibition. Dr. Mitch, thanks for your time, and we'll talk to you again next week.
I seem to be losing you, but I'll talk to you next week.
All right. When we come back, we'll have time for a radical rant on supporting legalization because it's better than prohibition. I know that sounds obvious, but, you know, some people need to be reminded.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.